Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kedushin Daf Lamed Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you'll find 9 lines from the bottom of Daf Lamed Vov. The general theme continues with those mitzvahs that apply or do not apply to women as well as men. The Mishnah itself has a long list of activities, services in the Beis HaMikdash with regard to the offering of sacrifices. We've noted this under our nosei, our topic heading on the side, which reads Rishima, which is a list, Shel Avodos Kodshim, different obligations, procedures that are associated with Kodshim, with the offering of sacrifices, Shenoshim, a non-Ksheros Lasosim, that women are not acceptable, not qualified to perform them. The Gemara, after the Mishnah gives us the list, will then provide sources for each one of the activities. Where scripturally do you see that women are not qualified for these actions? The Mishnah. Hasmichos, this has to do with the placing of the hands on a sacrifice before it's offered. Vahatnufos, the wavings. Vahagoshos, this has to do with the taking of the sacrifice, the drawing of the sacrifice near to the corner of the Mizbeach. That you find in the case of a meal offering before the handful, the kmitza, is taken from it. And vahakmitzos, the taking of the handful of meal offering, which ultimately is placed on the fire of the Mizbeach, which is the next word, vahaktoros. Vahamlikos, the special method of slaughtering bird offerings. Vahakabolos, the receipt of the blood of sacrifices. Vahazois, the sprinkling of the blood of the offering. The Gemara will ask which hazo are we referring to, but in the final picture, it's going to be the hazo of Chatasaof, of the bird sin, the sin offering bird sacrifice. These actions, we listed 8 actions. Noyagim ba'noshim velo benoshim. They apply, or we could say men are qualified and not so women. Chutz mi mincha soito nezira, with the exception of the meal offering brought by a soto, the woman who falls under suspicion of an act of immorality, who has a ritual that takes place in the Beis HaMikdash to establish her guilt or innocence. Unezira, a woman who observed Nezirus, Shehein Menifos. They do waive their karbonos. So that in the list we saw Tenufos as being, was actually number 2 in the list. When it comes to the Nezira and the Sota, there, those specific kind of offerings, the woman will participate in the waving of it. The waving is a moving action involving holding, placing their arms under the sacrifice that's brought, and a movement to and fro. Now the sources. Smichos, where do we see only males are involved with that and not the women folk? Dichtiv, Pasuk Beis in Vayikra, Perek Aleph says, Daber el Bnei Israel, and Pasuk Dalid mentions Vissomach. So even though the words are not literally together. The Gemara puts them together as if they're together. So you would read Daber al Bnei Israel v'somach, from which we derive Bnei Israel somchin vein Bnei Israel somchas. Bnei Israel being in the masculine form, they do the smicha action. The women do not. Tnufos Daber al Bnei Israel. Now the next word doesn't really appear in the Torah. The word in the Torah is lehonif, but the Gemara presents it in the similar, we'll just say similar verb form as we saw by smicha v'somach. So here it says vehonif or vehenif, even though technically speaking the word is lehonif, and you know, that is pointed out by the Rashash, and also in the Rashi the girsa on the side points this detail out. So if you happen to open up a chumash and look for the word vehenif, you won't find it. But you will find lehonif if you look at first pasuk chof tes, which is cited here. It's daber al bnei Israel is vayikra perek zayin pasuk chof tes, and then the lehonif word is found in the next pasuk in pasuk lamed. So even though we're leaving out words, it's a similar type drosha of the masculine form and then the verb. Hence we exclude the women folk, and the result is Bnei Yisrael Minifin Ve'ein Benos Yisrael Minifos. Hagoshos Dichtiv V'zos Teras HaMincha HaKrev Oysa Bnei Aaron. The law of the Mincha of the meal offering involves HaKrev, and the word HaKrev here is taken to mean Hagosha, the taking of the bowl of the meal offering and bringing it to the corner of the altar. That's Hagosha. And the Pasuk says, uses again the masculine form, so we derive Bnei Aaron velo Benois Aaron. Male Kohanim, not female Kohanim. Aaron, of course, is the first of the Kohanim, so the descendants of Aaron is a reference to the Kohanim, in this case the male Kohanim. Kemitzos, the taking of a handful of the meal offering. The meal offering is a bowl of flour. There might be oil as well, but mixed in. But you're taking a handful of meal offering. It could also be the kmitz is done after the mincha is actually baked and then broken up into pieces. We're not learning right now the details of mincha offering. Suffice it to say, part of the process involves taking a handful of that baked meal offering. Only the men folk do that. The male kohanim dichtiv vehivya el bnei Aaron v'komatz bnei Aaron velo bnos Aaron. Haktoros, the placing of the kmitza in the fire, or the burning of sacrifices on the altar is haktora dichtiv v'ktiru oisoi bnei Aaron velo bnos Aaron. So when it comes to the offering of the that's required to be placed in the fire, like in the case of the meal offering, the handful is placed in the fire. Only the male folk do that. Vamblikos, the special method of slaughtering a bird sacrifice, it's called malika. Dichtiv umolak vihiktir iskish malika lahaktora. The Torah compares the rules of Malika to the rules of Haktorah. In Haktorah, we already established the placing of the sacrifice in the fire is done only by the male folk. Hakabolas, the receipt of the blood, dichtiv v'krivu b'nei Aharon, v'omar mar, and it has been taught, and we continue at the top of Omid Beis, v'hikrivu zu kabolas adam. The word v'krivu in this pasuk is a reference to the Kabbalah, the receipt of the blood after the sacrifice is slaughtered. That is done only, as the Pasuk itself said, Bnei Aharon. V'hazos, and here the Gemara analyzes, what do you mean by the sprinkling? The sprinkling of the blood. Of what? Hazah dehecha, which hazah? E de Pora. Pora is a reference to the Pora Duma. The Pora Duma was itself not a sacrifice. The red heifer was slaughtered on the Mount of Olives opposite the Temple Mount. And there was a procedure of slaughtering the Pora Duma, preparing the Pora Duma. there was a sprinkling of its blood from the Mount of Olives in the direction of the Beis Hamikdash. So is that the Hazah that women are disqualified from? Well, Elazar Ksipah. Now, here there's a Machlokis Rashi and Tosis how to approach this. We're going to take the Rashi approach for right now. And he says that in the Torah, Elazar is a reference to the Kohen Gadol. He was the only one that was allowed to do the sprinkling of the Paraduma. And as far as Rashi's approach is concerned, Elazar is exclusive of even other rank-and-file kohanim. Rank-and-file kohanim that are eligible, are qualified to do Beis HaMikdash work, can't do the Paraduma. And certainly women will be excluded. So the Mishnah, in telling us that women are disqualified from Tazov, Paraduma would be unnecessary. That would be, we'll say, very obvious. E de Panim, if it's Hazah that takes place in the enclosed part of the Beis HaMikdash, on the curtain that separated the Kiddush from the Kiddush Kodoshim, on the golden altar, those are sprinklings that you find by several different, we'll say, activities. You find that by the what's called a special korban called Par Kohen Moshiach, Par Halam Dover. It's not important for us to get into the details of what those are. Suffice it to say that if that's the sprinkling that's referred to right now, well, HaKohen HaMoshiach Kosuv Ba. Once again, the Torah insists on the high priest doing those sprinklings, the Kohen Gadol. It excludes common Kohanim. Certainly, women would be disqualified. So there's no necessity for the Mishnah to tell us something that, once again, is so obvious. Elo Hazah de Ben Oif. The sprinkling of a bird sacrifice. The Rashi tells us, Hazoas Dam Oif, Dechtib Bechatasov, it says in the Torah regarding the bird sin offering, Vizah Midam Achatas. Vizrach Hashmina Noshim Psulos, and it's necessary for the Mishnah to tell us that women are disqualified from that. Now, let's turn back to the Gemara. Women are then the subject of the Mishnah in being disqualified from the Hazah of the Ben Oif. How do I know that? The Asya b'Kal v'Chomer mi'Ben Son. I reach this conclusion through Kal v'Chomer logic, using as the basis of my logic the case of Hazah, the blood applications in the case of an animal sacrifice. How does the Kal v'Chomer logic work? Uma ben son, shelo kovel lo kayin l'shritos, so kovel lo kayin l'azoso. An animal offering can be slaughtered by a non-Kohen. Yet, when it comes to the blood applications, the hazoas dam of an animal offering, a Kohen, a male Kohen, must do that. Ben oif, the bird offering, which has an initial greater limitation than the Ben Son, insofar as Shekovalo Kohen Lemalikoso, a Kohen, and only a Kohen, can do the special slaughter form of the bird sacrifice called Malika. So there's a limitation even at the slaughtering point, so Eino Din Sheikba Lo Lazoso. All the more so, a male Kohen would be appointed, and only he qualified for the sprinkling of the bird offering. So that the Mishnah is revealing to us the disqualification of women from Hazoas Dam, of a Korban Oif, of a bird offering. And the source of the Mishnah's information is this Kal v'Chomer. Once we've established that a woman is not, a female Kohen is not acceptable for doing standard Zrikas Hadam of Korbanus, certainly for the Zrikas Hadam or the Hazoas Hadam of bird offerings, they will be disqualified. Chutz mi minchas soita unezira. The Mishnah mentioned that even though women are disqualified from tenufa, from the waving action of other sacrifices, not so with regard to the meal offering brought by the sota and the nazira. With regard to the nazira, we're not making a reference to a meal offering per se of the nazira, but rather an aspect of the korbanos that a nazir brings at the end of his nazirus period involves waving. So the woman nazira, when she concludes her nazirus period and has to bring sacrifices, she does the waving of that which is required. Omar le Rabbi Elazar le Rabbi Yoshia de Dore. Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Yoshia, his own contemporary. Rashi points out that there was, at the time Rabbi Elazar was living, we're talking here about an Amora from the early Amoraic period, there happened to be a very elderly Rabbi Yoshia was also alive at the time, so to differentiate, we mention Rabbi Elazar spoke to Rabbi Yoshia, his Rabbi Elazar's contemporary, not the elderly Rabbi Yoshia. So Rabbi Elazar says to his colleague Rabbi Yoshia, or his contemporary, maybe a bit younger, he says, "Lo tesev akaroch, don't sit down, ad amrisli lahosh maitza, until you explain to me the following point of law. Minayin lemincha soita shtuna tenufa." Now he asks a question that doesn't seem to be necessary to be asked, but nevertheless we'll translate. From where do we know that a sota meal offering must undergo the tenufa, the waving action? So the Gemara asks, why would you ask that? Minolon begufa ksiva. You're asking, from where do we know that? It says so explicitly in the Torah, v'heinif es hamincha, and the mincha is waved. Ela tenufa bebaile minolon. We're focusing on a detail of the waving. How do you know that the owner, in this case, the sota woman, the suspect woman herself, has to participate in the waving? We've double underlined two expressions, but by the minolan, and later you'll see nazira minolan. So we're asking about the sota offering, that's the first one, and then the nazira waving. How do we know that in that instance there is the woman Nazira does the waving of her sacrifice? So how do we know that the sota woman participates in the waving? Asya yad yad mishlomim. There's a gezera shava, a word comparison from the topic of a peace offering, the shlomim, sacrifice. Ksiv hocha, it says in the case of sota, v'loka hakeim miyad ho'isha. Uksiv hosam, in the case of the shlomim, it says yodov tevi'ena. That posuk is a reference to the owner of the korban shlomim participates in the waving. Ma kan kohen af lahalon kohen. Just like in the case of the sota, the Torah specifies the involvement of a kohen. So too, in the case of the shlomim, a kohen must be involved. Ma lahalon bailim. And just like over there by the shlomim, the owner is involved with the waving. Af kan bailim. So too by the sota, the bailim, in this case the woman, is involved with the waving. So in the last two lines we've mentioned the owner and the kohen being involved with the waving action. Ha-ketzah, so how is this to be understood? Answer, kohen machnis yodoy tachas yad bailim umeinif. The bailim, the owner, has his hands directly under their respective sacrifices. The sota, it's under her meal offering, and the shlomim, it's an animal offering. And under the arms of the owner, the kohen then places his hands. And so they wave together. Ashkechon sota. We found a source for the sota, the woman being involved. She's the owner of that particular meal offering, and she is hence involved with the waving, as we proved. Nazira minolan. How do we know the woman Nazir, when she finishes her Naziris, that she does the waving required there? Answer, Asya, kaf misoita. It's another word comparison involving the word kaf or kapeho, or kape, any variation of the word kaf, which has to do with the hands. And you find by sota venosan al kapeho, Rashi says, and by the nozir you find venosan al kape ha nozir. Hence we have a word comparison, exera shava, between those two topics, enabling us to establish by the nazira she's involved with the tenufa, with the waving. As we continue, we now see a new Mishnah. On the side, we have a topic heading, the Nosei. It reads, Mitzvos HaTlios VeEinon Tlios Baretz. We'll discuss mitzvos that are land-related, related to the land of Israel, and mitzvos that are not, that are, we say, Mitzvah Shebegufo, mitzvos that are personal body-oriented. And mitzvos like that, we'll see, are not limited to Eretz Yisrael. It would seem to me that the placing of the Mishnah, there's a similar, it's a superstructure to these Mishnayos, in that just like in the previous Mishnayos, we were dealing with those mitzvahs that a woman is obligated in and those that she's not obligated in. Here we have those mitzvahs that are binding only in Eretz Yisrael and those mitzvahs that are binding both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah, Kol Mitzvah Shehi Tluya Baretz, Eino Noheges Ela Baretz. At this point, we were supposed to, let's say, not know with clarity what Tluya Baretz means, even though we explained it already, but the Gemara itself has to go through the stages of clarification. What does that mean? What does Tluya Baretz mean? And you can see Rashi immediately says, B'Gemara Meforesh Lu, within the Gemara, these terms will be explained. So those mitzvahs that are called Tluya Baretz are applicable only in the land, only in the land of Israel. V'Sheina Tluya Baretz, those that are not Tluya Baretz, Noheges Bein Baretz, Bein B'chutz Aretz, are practiced, are binding, are obligated, whether in the land or not. We continue at the top of Daf Lamed Zayin, Chutz Min Ha'orla V'Kilayim, with the exception of these two agricultural land-related mitzvahs, that even though they are Tluya Baretz, even though they're, we'll say, they're land-related, they're nevertheless binding, they must be observed outside the land. Orla is the law concerning fruit-bearing trees and the prohibition of benefiting from the fruits during the first 3 years of that tree's fruit production, and kilayim is the prohibition of mixed breeding various agricultural entities. When we speak about agricultural entities, we're speaking in very broad, non-committal terms, because you have the concept of grafting of trees. That's a form of kilayim. There's the issue of planting grains in a vineyard. That's an area of kilayim, and there is the mixing of different kinds of vegetables together. That's called kilei zroyim. So kilayim is a general term. It actually has broader ramifications, but right now we listed three areas where it's we'll say it's land or has some type of agricultural or botanical association. Rebbe Elazar Omer Af HaChodosh. It's not clear right now what Rebbe Elazar's point is. The Gemara itself will analyze what is Rebbe Elazar trying to accomplish. He says, even Chodosh. We can tell you what Chodosh is. Chodosh is a reference to grains that one would, let's say, benefit from prior to the 16th of the month of Nisan. Grains that, let's say, grew and took root during the winter months are prohibited to benefit from until the passage of the 16th of Nisan. Prior to the 16th of Nisan, that year's new grains are called Chodosh. The Gemara. My Tluya Umay She'eno Tluya. You'll notice we have a volcano shape highlighting the stages, and we indicate this on the side under the Nosei Mivne heading, where we've written Shlavim. These are stages. Levar Ma'u Pirush Tluya V'She'eno Tluya. What do those terms mean? So the Gemara asks, my tluya, my sheina tluya. Ilema tluya equals. If you're going to say that tluya means dichtiv ba bia, a mitzvah, concerning which the word entrance to the land is stated. There are psukim that say, ki savou, ki yaviacha, when you come into land, when the Almighty brings you into the land. So that maybe tluya baritz means mitzvahs concerning which the Torah specifies when you enter the land, thus and thus will be you will be commanded in them. V'sheino tluyop, and the Mishnah's reference to mitzvahs that are not tluyop, deloksiv bo biyov, where that term entrance is not associated with the mitzvah. Well, that cannot be the explanation. The Gemara rejects that. Varei tefillin u'peter chamor. The mitzvah of tefillin, which I'm sure everyone knows what that is, and peter chamor has to do with the redemption of a firstborn donkey. Dichsiv bohan bia. If you open the Torah, you'll see that the Torah uses the word bia. Rashi quotes the pasuk in the case of tefillin, and it says v'hoya ki yiviacha, and tefillin is something that is. Rashi says, the Gemara says, "V'nohagin, bein baritz, bein b'chutz laretz." It is practiced, it's observed, it's binding. Maybe you like the pun "binding" with regard to tefillin. They are applicable, whether in the land or not. Now, it's interesting to note how do we know through the eyes of Rashi, how do we know that tefillin observance is not limited to the land of Israel? So Rashi says, and we look together at Rashi on the second narrow line, V'nogin bein bars bein b'chutz v'chulei, tefillin ashkechon v'kama duchtin, we find in numerous places. Numerous places means in the Gemara. You find in numerous places, Barabonon, Amoroi, de Bovel, de Manchi tefillin. Amoraic rabbis in Bovel were putting on tefillin. It's interesting to note, Rashi seems to feel compelled to bring a source for that from actual recorded practice, and it's not sufficient to say, what do you mean tefillin is binding in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel? Well, everyone outside of Israel puts on tefillin, isn't it obvious? So Rashi went a step further and didn't rely on that kind of proof, but rather said there's sufficient evidence in Talmudic literature that great rabbis outside of Israel put on tefillin. So I know that it's noheg even outside of Israel, Babylonia being outside of Israel, even though the Torah uses the word bia in conjunction with presenting the mitzvah tefillin. So the Mishnah that said mitzvahs at tluyos baretz are binding only in the land of Israel cannot be a reference to mitzvahs concerning which you see the word bia. Omar Rav Yehuda, hochi ka'omar. So we come to the second explanation of what does tluyos baretz mean. Kol mitzvah shihi chayvas haguf. Any mitzvah that's, let's say, body related, body obligated, that is body, not land. Body is hence the term that represents eino tluya baretz. It's chovas haguf. It's an obligation upon the individual. Noheges bein baretz bein b'chutz laretz. That kind of mitzvah is applicable whether in the land of Israel, whether outside. Chovas karka eino noheges elo baretz. A type of mitzvah that's obligatory on the ground. Now, when we say on the ground, Rashi adds, or that which grows forth from the ground. And he has a list of 10 mitzvos that can be described as chovas karka. So those mitzvos that are applicable to the ground and that which grows forth from the ground, those are binding, are obligatory only in the land of Israel. We saw there were two exceptions. The Mishnah made reference to that, but that's for later. Mino hani mili detonu rabbonan. from where do we know that chayvas haguf is binding, is applicable? Rashi uses the term b'chol moishavos, wherever you are. And chayvas karka, those land-related mitzvahs, is only in the land of Israel. I'm emphasizing the term you see in Rashi. He says that chayvas haguf is noheges b'chol moishavos. Note the term that Rashi uses. So where do we know this from? We have psukim in Dvarim, Perek, Yud Beis, psukim Aleph, and Beis. We want to take a look at those psukim together. The Gemara itself will break down the psukim, so it's oftentimes good to get a flavor of the entire pasuk ahead of time. So Dvarim Perek Yud Beis pasuk Aleph reads Eile hachukim v'mishpotim asher tishmerun la'asois bo'oretz asher nosan Hashem Elokei Avoseich l'chol l'rishta kol hayomim asher atem chayim al ha'adama pasuk Beis abei ta'abdun es kol hamekoymos asher avdu shom agoyim asher atem yorishim oisom es Eloheihem al hehorim horomim v'al advois v'sachas kol eitz ra'anon. Pasuk Beis is a reference to the destruction of idolatry. Pasuk Aleph made reference to the fulfillment of mitzvahs, and it made reference to ba'aretz, mitzvahs that are in the land, and then it also makes reference to kol hayomim asher atem chayim al ha'adama, which implies wherever you may be living. Now the Gemara. Eile hachukim elu hamidroshos. Chukim are those mitzvahs that are derived through the different laws, the hermeneutic laws of derivation, of meaning, of verses. Vamishpatim elu hadinim. Mishpatim is a reference to laws. Dinim, often we saw in our previous year, is a reference to laws that are of a financial, monetary nature. Asher tishmerun zu mishnah. That's a reference to Mishnah, the oral law. Lasos zu maisa. That means the performance of mitzvahs. Boretz. Yochol kol hamitzvahs kulin loyu noyhagim ela boretz. Could it be that all mitzvahs, all 613 mitzvahs of the Torah, their practice is limited to the land of Israel? Talmud lomar kol hayomim asher atem chayim alo adoma. That phrase, literally, all days that you're alive on the Adama, on the earth, that implies whether it's in the land or outside the land. Chaim, wherever you live. So that's inclusive of areas outside of Israel. Well, ikol hayomim yochlu noagim bein boretz bein b'chutzaretz. If that be the case, does that mean that the entire body of 613 mitzvos is applicable outside the land as well? Talmud lomer bo'aretz. The pasuk itself said specifically in the land of Israel, not outside. Achar shiribo hakosuv umiyet. You see a pasuk that has an inclusive aspect to it and an limitation, exclusive aspect to it. How am I to determine what applies to what? Say ulamad. Go and derive it from one of the 13 different methods of deriving information from psukim, and it's the Rashi makes reference to the concept or the form known as dover halomid, meaning learn things from context. So tsei ulamad mimash omur binyan. Go see what is stated in the proximity. So you have the pasuk that said kol, the end of the pasuk said kol ayomim ashetem chayim adama. What is in proximity of that? Abei Tabdun, that's the beginning of Pasuk Bey, says Abei Tabdun is called a Mekoymus Isha Avdu Sham V'chulei. The reference to the obligation of destroying idolatry. Ma Avidis Kechavim Yuchedis Shichoyves Aguf. Just like idolatry is something that is not a land-based commandment, but it's a personal, an individual commandment, i.e. the prohibition of idolatry. V'noheges bein baretz bein b'chutz laretz. It certainly is applicable not only in the land of Israel but outside as well, because that mitzvah happens to be written right next to the phrase kol hayom emasher atem chayim l'adoma, which meant outside of Israel as well. So we use that as a basis for establishing which mitzvahs are not limited to Israel. Af kol shichoyves haguf. So to any mitzvah that has that characteristic, that it's an individual commandment, literally a body, personal commandment, as opposed to a land-based commandment, noyheges bein baretz bein b'chutz laretz, is binding whether in the land or outside the land. Before we conclude today's shiur, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.